News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. We are finagling behind the scenes here a little bit. kind of a, not necessarily a breaking story, but one that I wasn't aware of at all. Dalton wasn't really aware of it all. And it's got to do with tonight's scheduled execution.
Yeah, which is possibly going to be put off. Looks like it'll be put off. But the story of the man that was killed in that pawn shop in Orville, Alabama, back in 1998. Incredible story. I want to get to that, but we do have some traffic news we want to get to, too.
Yeah, I want to get to that, too, because when you told me about the name, I went all the way back to 1981, maybe, or 82, when I was overnight at North Georgia Country in Athens, and I believe that guy... I think he had some viable songs on the radio.
Oh, really?
I think.
We'll get to it. Yeah. Jimmy Ellis. Story on the way. It's pretty incredible. But we do have a texter letting us know. Wreck westbound on I-10 between the Loxley exit and Spanish Fort. That's westbound on 10 between the Loxley exit and Spanish Fort. We have a wreck, and it looks like it's already slowing things down quite a bit. As far as the Longhorn that was on the Bayway and slowing things down yesterday, one texter said spent an hour and a half trying to cross the bay. Jason said, we've all said the Bayway traffic is a bunch of bull, and now it came true. Michael said, there's been as many bulls on parade on the Bayway as there have been shark attacks in Alabama this decade. But Goat Hill rallied around a girl's family to pass a stupid shark alert bill. Yeah, and as much as we've talked about that shark alert bill, obviously terrible for the girl that was attacked.
Sure,
and it was in Florida waters. And it was a Mountain Brook legislator who brought that shark attack bill to the legislature. Now it's nationwide, right? But you're right. We've now seen as many bulls on the Bayway as we have shark attacks in a long time. And I believe I read there was a shark attack over near PCB, maybe over the weekend, and I didn't see any shark alerts. Maybe that wasn't close enough, or I don't know exactly. Maybe they don't have the shark alert technology quite ready yet, but haven't seen it in action just yet. We did see a longhorn on the Bayway, and man, that I feel terrible too for obviously the animal.
Oh my gosh.
Falling out of a dang trailer.
Good Lord.
Failed, and that's terrible. And also for the animal's owner. And I don't know how secure that latch was, or maybe it was rusted out and old. I don't know exactly how that happened, but to be the person driving behind that trailer as the longhorn comes tumbling out.
Surprise.
Yes, surprise. And I don't know if that longhorn was hit by another vehicle after it tumbled out or not, but falling out of a trailer at that any kind of speed really is probably enough to do some damage anyway, and hopefully they don't have to euthanize the longhorn this morning. But something we can all say we've now seen, a longhorn on the Bayway.
Luna was the name of the longhorn. Luna was on her way home to Magnolia Springs. She had a veterinary appointment in Mississippi, so maybe she was kind of halfway back, and then suddenly what happened. I saw my buddy Jeremy from I always get the name of the organization mixed up, Vets to Cowboys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was just talking, you know, he does a lot of transporting his livestock a lot, and he just says people will get on a little bit the way he checks, double checks.
Oh, you have to.
Triple checks.
Yeah.
But he says this is why he does it. And he was pretty sad about what happened to to Luna on the Bayway yesterday.
And they kept trying to load Luna onto another trailer, and there were issues with that. Mm-hmm. I guess eventually they got him rounded up, got Luna rounded up. Michael says, Dalton, I think it was a military guy, or was it the dive school over in PCB? Yeah, I think you're right there. I don't know if the shark alert system went off for that. Another texter said, did I just hear Trump admitting to stealing oil from Iran?
I don't know what you heard.
He said tonight, that was his latest Truth Social post, was that tonight we will attack Iran once again, which means it'll be earlier in the day for us and nighttime in Iran. But that's part of the Truth Social post I didn't necessarily get all the way down to. He said in the not-too-distant future, we will be taking Karg Island and other oil infrastructure points and assume total control of their oil and gas markets. But you might be referring to what Dan was playing this morning.
I think that's what he's referring to.
The inflation readings came out yesterday, and it was higher, and it's because of fuel prices. And Trump gave the Democrats something to latch onto when he said, I like the inflation number, or something along those lines.
Something like that. And they led him to this confession out of the story, and you wonder if the people around Donald Trump would rather that he had not said it. I don't know, but he's not completely clear on what he means, but you can break it down for yourself.
I love the inflation. You know why? Because as soon as this war is over, you know, I can say it now, something you didn't know. Do you know we've been taking out millions of barrels of oil? Nobody knows it. You know who doesn't know about it? Iran until right now.
Now, that could be from seized oil tankers he's talking about, or they, with the blockade, may have just escorted some oil from other countries that was trying to get through the strait to get that through. So he didn't explicitly say that was Iranian oil, but still, that was breaking news. They said they were able to get some of that out.
Right, and the way it was just like nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Let me tell you a little story here, buddy. Since you're a reporter and you're on the scene right now, I'm going to give you something that nobody even knows.
Mm-hmm.
And then he rolls it on out there. And I think that's what the texter's referring to.
And I thought that dip was maybe the market saying maybe operations will finally cease. And that's why we saw the oil market drop. But apparently it's because there were more supply coming out of the strait that helped lower that number, according to Trump.
Yeah.
So this story, and I will give props when it's due, and it certainly is here, Ivana Hrinkiu, who writes for AL.com, and she's kind of their prisons and death row reporter. I mean, so often her reports, she's almost, it seems, vouching for a lot of the death row inmates who are scheduled and go to their execution.
Wasn't she cited for her manner of dress at one of the executions? Was that her?
That kind of rings a bell.
I think it was her.
Like, I remember that coming up.
Skirt was too short or something that, but for it next, you know. Anyway, I didn't know they had a dress code for executions, but evidently whatever she was wearing that time did not pass muster.
I don't
people
plan
at the prison.
I don't plan on being on death row. But if I ever am, wear whatever you want. I don't mind. Whatever you want to wear. But so this execution we've been keeping tabs on, it was scheduled for tonight. And last night, after the state of Alabama appealed to the appeals court to allow the nitrogen hypoxia execution to go through, the appeals court last night sided with death row inmate Jeffrey Lee and agreed with the judge and the other court that ruled that nitrogen hypoxia was an unconstitutional way to be executed. Remember, they instead suggested that the state use a firing squad, but we would have to call a special session and have the legislature approve that as a manner of execution. Not sure if they'll be able to use lethal injection, or certainly I would imagine Yellow Mama's kind of out of the picture these days as far as using the electric chair. But remember, this inmate, this death row inmate, Jeffrey Lee, why he was on death row, and that's for the 1998 shootings and killings of Jimmy Ellis, Elaine Thompson, and Helen King survived that shooting but was injured. And it was a pawn shop robbery back in 1998. Ellis owned the store. Thompson died on the floor of that pawn shop. King survived her injuries. So Lee was scheduled to die tonight in Atmore. He's got that legal battle going on. He, in that murder, by the way, he went into the pawn shop with, I believe it was his cousin. And let's see, she wrote it all out here. So the murderer went into the pawn shop with his cousin and brother, and we're looking at wedding rings. He told King that he would return with money to buy one of the wedding rings they had in that pawn shop. So they all three left. Then Lee, they said, drank and smoked cocaine-laced marijuana, returned to the store, walked inside with a sawed-off shotgun, and immediately began shooting, firing multiple times at all three victims. The shooting was caught on surveillance video. Lee was arrested the next day in
Georgia.
Surveillance video
back then.
Yeah. And remember, the jury ruled 7-5 to give him life in prison. The judge overruled the jury. And since then, the state has made judicial override illegal. But it wasn't retroactive. So this man stayed on death row.
Yep.
And now you have this big legal battle today. But what I did not know was the backstory behind Jimmy Ellis.
You're not going to believe what I just found, but go ahead.
Okay.
we'll get to it.
So Jimmy Ellis, he owned that pawn shop that he died in 1998, but his career prior to that And let me know on the text line if you had any idea about this. There's a documentary that came out just over 10 years ago, back in 2015, called Orion, The Man Who Would Be King. And it's about this Elvis impersonator who really became popular after Elvis's death because he looked so much like Elvis and maybe more importantly, sounded so much like Elvis.
And he didn't really intend to be. He wanted to be Jimmy Ellis.
He wanted to be Jimmy Ellis, the musician.
Yeah.
Ever since he was a kid,
yeah,
he found out he had this great voice. But even while Elvis was alive, he looked and sounded so much like him that he couldn't get out of that gravitational pull.
Right. So,
and it worked against him.
So he's with Sun Records, which was Elvis's record company, I believe.
Eventually, yeah, he ended with, but he started over in Macon, Georgia.
Capricorn Records, that'd be the Allman Brothers and that group right there. And I used to work right near those studios. So I know a little bit about that from the 80s. So his name was Orion. And when you told me that...
Mm-hmm.
Remember that I had...
So, well, let me give a quick little background. Yeah, so he's trying to perform as Jimmy Ellis,
right,
the musician. He's not having the popularity that he would like. He even wrote a song that called... It was called, like, I'm Not Elvis. I'm Not Trying to Be Like Elvis was a song he put out there. So then Shelby Singleton, Sun Records president, he believed Ellis would have been a star had Elvis never lived. But Elvis then died in 77. So many people obviously loved and missed Elvis,
sure,
after his sudden passing. And Singleton began overdubbing Jimmy Ellis, the man who was killed in that pawn shop robbery, on what was originally a solo hit for Jerry Lee Lewis. And they even put him on some songs with Charlie Rich and Carl Perkins. A lot of people thought that those were unreleased Elvis records.
Yeah.
So that helped with sales,
yeah,
I'm
right,
sure.
Right.
Meanwhile, there's a author who was trying to write a book about a celebrity faking their own death to escape fame. Elvis dies. She puts some urgency to finishing this book and makes it about Elvis faking his own death to escape fame. She sees Ellis performing in a club in Nashville, and then Singleton, the Sun Records owner there, read the book, decided it was time for Orion to become real. So they slap a Lone Ranger-style mask on him and put him out on tour. And then tons of Elvis fans, who, even if they didn't really believe it, liked believing that Elvis never really died and came back and continued to release music, were following him around. He then, again, got tired of not being himself. I mean, he was completely other identity.
Sure.
And he had all these adoring fans. It must be so weird. So in a show, he threw the mask off and then eventually began releasing music under his own name again. That didn't work out. He tried again as Orion in the late 80s and then at some point owned a pawn shop in Orville, Alabama, and ends up getting killed in that 1998 robbery.
That's amazing.
Crazy.
And so here's where I don't want to say I'm... Let me be so bold to say I'm part of the story.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Well, in this way. So you said Orion, Elvis, and I'm like, what? I told you, it's ringing a bell.
Familiar.
So way back when, on this country radio station in Athens, Georgia, Orion was a popular singer,
mm-hmm,
some sort of an act. I didn't know what it was. I was new to the business. And it was, I think he played in Athens.
Mm.
You know, I can remember people calling and saying, we went to the Orion show tonight. I'm thinking, is that possible? Or am I making this all up? So we go to AI. Did the musical act Orion ever play in Athens, Georgia? Yes.
Okay.
Jimmy Ellis, known for his uncanny vocal resemblance to Elvis, did perform in Athens, Georgia. And this is the exact kind of show that I would have said we would have promoted, commercials on the air about it. He played at the Athens VFW. And that's the kind of commercial we would have played. Orion came through Athens while I was on the radio there. And I kind of remember that sensation of what it was, but I didn't have it all together until to think that's the guy that was murdered outside of Selma.
Yeah.
Crazy.
What an incredible story. So I'm going to have to pull up the documentary now and watch it, but and it's important to keep that in mind, and I know our listeners are good at it too, that once it comes time for a death row execution, so many of the stories are focused on, well, the person that's still alive,
yeah,
right? The person who's on death,
yeah,
row and set to be executed, and they get so many people that back them and support them that you forget about the dang victims that and usually time has gone so far, but this was an incredible story about the man that was killed that night in Selma.
It's amazing.
Never knew about it.
And I didn't. What is weird to me is finally I know who O'Ryan was. O'Ryan was this act to try to kind of capitalize on Elvis. Maybe I kind of knew that at the time, but I was so new to country music. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was listening. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And so now some of it's been explained to me. And wow.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
I'll take
it. If you ever listened to O'Ryan or saw him perform, we'd love to hear from you on the text line, 251-343-0106. 822 right now coming up. We'll also have a conversation with Rob Holbert from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, and more of your texts on the way too, 251-343-0106 coming up next.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
If you do have a Luna tip, guess you could call it on the text line.
About the Longhorn?
Yeah. Let's see who this is. Is it an unnamed texter? Anyway, Luna is at my buddy's boarding facility and will see the vet at 11 o'clock this morning. I can update at that point. Guy's name is Aaron. So Aaron says right now, Luna's, I guess, okay.
Yeah, Luna. If Luna lives through this, I mean...
I hope so.
She'll be quite the celebrity.
Yeah.
Have to tour around Mobile and Baldwin counties, although she might not want to get very many more trailers.
I'm not getting that trailer anymore.
Michael says, Dalton, the German FIFA guy, Freddie. Yeah, the one who's been documenting his trip to America and was in Auburn for that game on Tuesday night. Michael says he was in Fairhope yesterday afternoon, posted a cool video about it. I bet he goes by the battleship today. I saw that. Yeah, he was posting some great photos staying the night in Fairhope as he makes his FIFA tour.
Well, I thought he was in Texas.
Yeah, World Cup tour. I thought he was headed to Texas, too, but somebody must have said, no, you've got to make it to Fairhope. I wonder if he got stuck on the Bayway yesterday while all of that was going on with the Longhorn. Squirrel Vereen says, dang it, no, that WKRG news break is wrong. D'Angelo Merrill didn't think James Jones shot his girlfriend. He simply went to that wrong apartment and kicked open the door. That's also a case with the victim being ignored by the media and everyone. Yeah, I heard something like a case of like guilty of a case of mistaken identity. No, he's guilty of
murder.
Manslaughter. Yeah. Reckless manslaughter. Absolutely ridiculous.
Just awful.
Yeah, killing a veteran who was just sitting in his own home doing, nothing wrong.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely terrible story there. Jesse says, that story went every... It's a tough story to keep up with, but with that Jimmy Ellis playing O'Ryan, the man who was killed in that pawn shop murder. But what an incredible story.
I was interrupting you because I got so excited that I found out that it was way in the back of my mind.
That you had seen him performed.
My brain's left field fence, like all the way back there. And then I look it up. It's like I kind of remember this guy, O'Ryan. They were a big act. He was a big act.
Yeah, I guess so.
Very much a novelty act, but he was a big deal.
Yeah, Paul said, I saw some of the video of that shark attack in PCB. Was horrific. I did not see that video.
I have not.
I have to check it out. And Daniel says, why in the hell would we get an alert after a Florida shark attack? What's next? We get traffic warnings for PCB traffic. Yeah. I don't know where exactly we stand on the shark alert system. I'll try to dig in. I know that they either passed it as a national bill or we're talking about doing that, but it certainly passed the Alabama legislature earlier this year.
Rob Holbert with Lanyap is on the way. We'll talk with him about a number of things. Big story about Bellingrath Gardens you may have seen.
Yeah, that was another great one by Kyle Hammer.
Yeah, that's very detailed. Rob's up next. Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings.
With SRA News.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Not a good stuff to pick. Kind of pick apart from Lanyap Mobile in the last week or so. So we'll see where we get started here. It's 8:35. Dan and Dalton and Rob Holbert from Lanyap. Morning, Rob.
Morning. So it's been a very, very busy week since the last time I talked to you.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's been something to see, and we'll get into a lot of that drama here in just a minute. But I want to start with this is the cover story, I believe, in this week's Lagniappe, and another great job by Kyle Hamrick. And writing about, it's a news story, certainly, and the Bellengrath Morris Trust Fund and how much of that money will go to the Bellengrath Gardens and Home, and then how much to the three colleges that also receive funding from that, Huntington, Rhodes College, Stillman College. And sure, that's news. I mean, they had to go to court and figure out exactly, you know, how much would go to each annually. And it's about 3-1, about $3 million a year, I think, $3 to $4 million going to the colleges, and then just over $1 million to Bellengrath. But that's kind of what they had already been working through, and this just kind of puts a stamp on it. But the job that Kyle did going through the history,
explaining all this,
of Walter and Bessie Bellengrath.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people already know that story, but for me, I learned so much. Great job by Kyle Hamrick.
Yeah, I did too. I there was a lot of stuff I didn't know as well. And, you know, Kyle, you can tell Kyle's a history major.
Yep.
He likes that stuff. Yep. But, yeah, it's a fascinating story, and it's been a, you know, this on-again, off-again lawsuit for decades. And, you know, it's sort of this struggle over who is going to get what from that that trust, and I think they finally have it sort of partitioned out and said, okay, this is what you get, this is what they get, and we're not going to have any more of these of these issues. But yeah, it's a really, really cool story, and I loved just seeing the history of it and finding out, you know, how things began out there. It's really cool.
Nearly $97 million we're talking about.
That's left.
That's left.
Yeah.
And
it's a chunk of money, man. Yeah. You know, that bottling business did pretty well.
Yeah. So, Kyle takes you through Walter's, from his humble beginnings in Georgia to purchasing that Coca-Cola bottling franchise down here, and then making that money in a big way for a long time. And then I guess Bessie, I don't want to give too much away, but the gardens became her child, her children. They didn't have children, and Walter knew how important that was to her, and then, you know, what it actually grew into and became, and wanted to keep that rolling. And also loved Kyle's conversations with, you know, some of the officials out there at Bellengrath, including the executive director, and how, while that $1 million, like every botanical garden across the every garden across the country would like to have that kind of cushion. But Bellengrath, they've been working their tails off, because that doesn't cover everything, and they've added so much more to the gardens and home experience over the years. But just a really cool story overall.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bellengrath is really a treasure for our community, and it's one of those things that maybe we don't think about that much, maybe don't get out there very often, but it's a beautiful place, and it is, it's unique. So, you know, I think it's one thing that I'm glad they're going to continue to get what they need out there.
Well, I think I saw in the story that it's that a little over $1 million a year annually doesn't, you know, put quite the dent in the $6 million.
Yeah. $6 million is what they.
I still think operating. They should have got more. I think they deserve more.
So the operating costs are like $6 million, but anyway, they're working it out.
Let's take it back to court. That's what I say. Speaking of that, and some threats of going to court, let's talk about this Tuberville situation and the twists and turns. And so he releases his redacted tax reform or tax forms last week. You guys reported on that. And then who was it that discovered the barcode was left on there and the information?
Well, since last we spoke, we were, you know, we had those tax forms. They gave them to McFeeters, Ken McFeeters, who is a guy, you know, a fellow Republican who ran and lost.
Whose office was ransacked, by the way. So it was, you know.
Whose office was ransacked that last week as well. But you know, I think there was a full expectation that he was going to distribute them, and there was nothing they said that he couldn't, or, you know, that would be only for his use. And, of course, he distributed them to various media outlets. And we put them online, like everybody, and look, they were on our webpage for 4 days, and Tuberville's people were more than happy to have them out there. And they were, this is the end of it. It proves that he's here, and he's been here, and et cetera, et cetera. And then we started getting some information that, hey, you know, these numbers, I mean, you know, people are sending us numbers. We're like, well, okay, well, we've got to go look and make sure. And then when we looked, you know, the barcode at the top that they did not redact is one that is produced by tax accounting software, and it contains every bit of the information, including personal information. I mean, the first thing we did was took ours down, and we redacted it for them. You're welcome, Tommy.
Yeah, but for Scott's story, after the barcode thing became news, when he broke that, you guys took some care to not put, you know, all that specific information in the story, too, right?
We just wrote what we wrote what we thought was pertinent and what was necessary. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to, you know, go overboard. And his people, you know, they were aware on Thursday. We were telling them that we have some numbers, and they were just busy telling us that we were doing something illegal, and which is completely untrue. And you know, and they on Saturday sent us a cease and desist letter, which, you know, they're worth about as much as the paper they're written on. But you know, they said they're going to sue us, they're going to do this, and they're going to take, you know, file an injunction, etc. You know, it's Thursday now. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything like that. I think it's, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they're going to do anything. I think if they do, it'd be massively stupid, but that they've already done some massively stupid things. So we'll see.
And so that the hearing is that this weekend, the GOP
that is
hearing
Sunday.
Sunday.
What a day for a hearing. Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's being held where, you know, it's nobody can go to it, et cetera. It's a, you know, on a Sunday, it's kind of strange. And you know, we'll see what comes out of that. I don't, you know, there's some people who are riding around the state who claim that they've got info that the GOP is going to boot Tommy from the you know, from the ticket. Wow. I find that very difficult to believe, but I thought it's very difficult for me to believe they're even having this hearing. But that's really the big issue, is not this thing, because I think it will be pretty much performative. But there's going to be a lawsuit after this.
Yeah,
and, you know, there will be a lawsuit from Doug Jones about his ability to run for office, about Tuberville's ability to run for office. And by the way, we wrote a story about Doug Jones. You know, he said, you know, when we were talking to him earlier when all this stuff was going on, we asked him about his, and he got a little incredulous with us.
Yeah.
Said, I can't believe you would ask me, et cetera. And then he said, well, you know, I'll tell you what, if he puts his out, I'll put mine out.
But
and so we called him back and said, hey, he put his out. You putting yours out? And we so far radio silence. So just telling you, you know, for those of you who think we're backed by Soros or whatever else it is, it ain't that.
It's just so hilarious to me. I mean, for people on either side, and you think, well, your side's doing it and mine's not. And then you get this picture-perfect hypocrisy. Everyone knows.
I'm not saying that Doug Jones isn't, you know, hasn't had a residence here and paid taxes and done all those things. I don't know. But he said he would put him out when Tommy did, and he didn't do it.
So you think...
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just with the Tuberville thing and reading your reporting, Scott Johnson's reporting, you know, if this does continue to go down the legal route, you're saying it sounds like boiling it down to 2019 that could be the year that causes some problems for Tuberville.
I think that's it. I mean, you know, the 2018, he submitted 2018 tax returns, which was surprising to me, but especially because he voted in Florida in 2018 and he had a homestead exemption in 2018. Those are when you do the hierarchy of your residencies, those are the two top things, and as well as paying where you pay taxes. But, you know, when you look at the amount, and this is why his people freaked out. I mean, we had, you know, one of his people called up and screamed at Scott. I got a letter, you know, that was a mile long telling me how unethical and illegal we are and all sorts of things. A text from somebody. You know, so, I mean, they had a full-on freak-out when the numbers were published. Because that 2019 number is $11,806 for income in Alabama. That's a hard number to look at and believe, because 2 years later, that number was $690,000 or $660,000 for Alabama and $690,000 federal. You know, that's the thing that they're going to end up having to explain, and I think I'm not an accountant. There could be, you know, we've all heard the stories of accounting tricks for billionaires.
Ways around here.
Don't pay any taxes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it just doesn't look really great. And the disparity between what he claimed on his Alabama gross income and his federal gross income on his state, on that state record is pretty big. And he has a lot of investments. When you cross-reference it with the documents that are filed with the U.S. Senate and from 2019 were filed for his run, it's hard to look at it and say that's all you had in income, because he has a couple of properties that generate at least $150,000 according to that documentation. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, how that's done, I don't know.
But we shall see.
You know, of course, Florida does not have an income tax. So people don't file an income tax in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And you get in these whole issues of, you know, filing partial income in some states and others. But his, you know, his form is a full-time resident form. So, you know, that's where I think you're going to, I don't think this goes away. And I think that's, you know, I thought, well, hey, if he gives his tax forms out, that'll be the end of it. If he's filed taxes and it just raised more questions, and, you know, they can get big mad at us about publishing them, but you know those numbers, they put them out there, and you know it's essentially like if they redacted the English and then put the rest of it out in Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it takes a grand total of 2 minutes to look it up. I mean, there's 1,000 websites that will decipher that stuff.
A lot of scrutiny when you run for office, and we know darn well that Barry Moore lives in the state of Alabama. That's not the issue with Barry Moore as he tries to transition from Congress to the U.S. Senate. But his military record, I'm not sure what all the hub... What's the conclusion of Lane yet?
I don't have a conclusion on that one either. You know, we did a story on it. We wrote what they said. His issue is now he's running around also threatening to sue people for even asking him questions.
Mm.
And, you know, that's just craziness. I mean, both these guys, I don't know. I mean, I know where they get these ideas. But I mean, it's pretty obvious where they get these ideas. But the concept, I mean, you know, at the Alabama Political Reporters, Josh Moon just called and asked him questions, and he received a cease and desist letter for asking questions. There's a term called prior restraint that maybe a lot of people aren't familiar with, but it's these things, you know, I don't know why somebody who's running for office would threaten newspapers with lawsuits and you know, over stories that... the information's there, or they're just asking questions. I mean, I don't get it. But
it wasn't a good look him missing that debate, in my opinion. He missed the debate.
It wasn't a good look, because I think he knows full well that he's going to be asked about it. I don't know that it's, you know, I'm not in the military. I know, Dan, you have a son who was very much in the military, and these things mean a tremendous amount. I'm not smart enough with that, or knowledgeable enough about that, to know the intricacies of this. What you know, you call yourself after you leave, if that means something or not, and that's where this is boiling down to. I mean, it's really minutia.
It
looks like to me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how all that goes. And Tuesday we got that primary runoff election, so not far away.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have a whole lot of time to get into this, but another story that you guys were kind of at the forefront here, and that's with the Chris Curry and his presidency of the MAA, and with Continental Aerospace and flying him out to China, and how all of that kind of fell out. Well, now Continental Aerospace being sold to private equity and part of a DOJ settlement with the state-owned, state-run Chinese company that did hold Continental. So a bit of an end of a chapter there, it sounds like.
Well, I guess so. I don't know that the people at Continental said, hey, you know, we didn't do this because of the DOJ settlement, but it's sort of happening at the same time. So I don't, you know, that's, I guess, open for interpretation. But there's certainly things there that... You know, a lot of the reporting that Scott did on that is pretty impressive, and he really dug into a lot of stuff. And you know, I think maybe it is just a good thing if it's being sold to another company that maybe he doesn't have close ties to China, or is part of, is a Chinese company.
Yeah, and it almost seems like a technicality of sorts. I mean, we know there was all kinds of COVID fraud, but what they're getting him on is the $7.5 million forgivable loan from the PPP. Mm-hmm. So maybe a way to push China a little further out there. And that's in the latest issue of Lanyap, along with so many other great stories. We always encourage people to subscribe online. That way they can get them straight into their inbox and log on right when those reports are published. How can they do that?
Well, you can go to lanyapmobile.com, sign up. It's $1 for the first month, and it's just $9 a month after that, which breaks down to 30 cents a day. We're putting stuff out all the time. There's great reporting, great investigative reporting that's happening almost every day. So you're missing out if you're not there, and come out and check it out. If you don't like it, you can cancel. It's, but I think you will.
Read up on the love story between Tommy Tuberville and Rob Hulbert with Lanyap. That's got a future to it, I believe. It's thanks again, Rob. We'll talk in a week, okay?
All right, Rob Hulbert, Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Coming back, we'll wrap up this edition of Mobile Mornings and let you know who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show. It's on the way next.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
What's happening? We're rolling up towards 9 o'clock. We're at 8:56 now. Mobile Mornings from the Jeff Poor Show is immediately after ours.
Yeah, and if you're voting Tuesday, and we hope you are, you'll definitely want to listen to the first hour of Jeff's show. You'll have the top of the hour right after we wrap up here, Attorney General candidate Jay Mitchell on with Jeff, and then just after 9:30, Congressman Barry Moore set to be on with Jeff. We'll have Barry on Monday morning leading you into that Tuesday election. After Barry, coming up at 10:30, Jeff will talk with April Marie Fogel, and then Sam Roberts with the Coleman Daily joining Jeff just after 11:30
this morning. That'll be more information on a poll. Roberts, he follows these elections very closely and has polling information. I think it's pretty good, but it's hard to say who's good at this point because so many of the polls are so far away from one or the other. It's kind of like, so we'll see what he's got to say. He is interesting. Is he accurate? I don't know.
Yeah, he gives some good insight, though, that's for sure. Joshua on the text line says, I have an answer for Robert. Or Rob, I have an answer for Robert. Most reporters are liberal and will show it in their reporting. Duh. Joshua was saying that's why you get the cease and desist orders from Tuberville and Moore over this last week. Jason.
Well, they also ticked off Tuberville's
Doug Jones.
Doug Jones.
Well, I don't know how much Doug Jones is ticked off. He's probably taking some pleasure that Tuberville's going through it right now. But I just think it's such a picture perfect, you know, encapsulation of politics that Doug Jones is like loving that. Absolutely loving that Tuberville is getting drugged through the mud, and then he himself won't release his taxes.
Yeah, I mean, suddenly he's running for cover.
It's crazy. No Hudson interview today. Yep, that's a good one. Hudson's been on a lot here these last few days. Now, we'll get more on.
They pulled the wool over our eyes a little bit.
We do try to keep it as even as possible, but interviews do come in, several of them here on this station with all these different shows we have. Another texter, so Rob has already peed off our new governor. Great way to get interviews and support your paper. Couldn't happen to a better guy. Jason asked if we had time to ask Rob about Faith Academy and Carrie Meredith after that ruling this week. Sorry, I did not get to that in time, Jason. Have to ask him maybe next week if we still can. And a lot of people still wondering about Luna the Cow. You said Luna the Longhorn will vet appearance at 11 this morning after that terrible day on the Bayway yesterday.
Aaron says he will get back with us with a Luna update, so listen for it on FM Talk 106.5.